This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea's sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
It is Tuesday, and lo and behold, a homeless person walked in the door in the name of Dr. History. How are you?
I'm doing great, Zeb.
Oh, man. You've been on vacation.
Yes, we did take a little trip up to Coeur d'Alene.
Been playing grandpa.
Yes, and construction for my daughter. Helping.
Are you good at constructing things?
Well, I built some shutters for her house.
Really?
I built a lawn bench for her garden.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and I enjoy that.
Well, I appreciate your offering to help us.
You're welcome.
You know, I missed you, and we want to say thank you to Gary Shoresman.
Yes.
And Gary, I don't know if he's listening or not this morning, but Gary is always there to help, serve, and befriend different causes and people. And Gary, God bless you from our house to yours. Thank you for what you did.
He's always been there to help when
yeah,
we need him.
I appreciate him.
Yep.
Now, what are we going to talk about this morning?
Well, you know, when you think of the Old West, one of the first words that has to come into your mouth is cowboy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on. So I'm going to start with kind of a history of the first cowboys. Okay, we've talked about the ones that herd cows and, you know, the cattle drives and stuff like that. But
yeah.
We're going to start right at the beginning of how they got their name.
Down to Mexico or something?
Well, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, you know, so the story of the American cowboy begins in Texas, really.
Okay.
Which is the great cattle raising industry, and in 30 years it fanned out from there clear into the northern plains, the western states, so really, from Texas, it just spread throughout the whole West.
Right.
So you picture this, you know, longhorn cattle. You think of rawhide and leather, spurs, a sombrero, a six-shooter. And this kind of formed the distinctive Texas cowboy. And all the other cowboys just kind of followed that Texas image, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I guess you could say, of course, California would lay claim to having, because of the Spaniards, you know,
right,
they could lay claim to the birth of the cowboy, but I honestly think Texas would be the home.
Yeah, and actually, cowboys can be divided into two classes, basically those coming from Texas and then the others that kind of came out from the East.
Yeah.
I mean, and they were and actually chiefly from Missouri, but the Texans, they were the best.
Yeah.
They were the best riders. They did the best of everything, and everybody else, and there were a lot of good cowboys after that.
I was shocked when you said Missouri, though.
Yeah, for some reason, a lot of them came out of Missouri, and I'm
really
not quite sure why.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes you can think of the bad name of the Texans when you think about maybe their tempers. And,
easy on the words on the radio.
Yeah. And the fact that they were mostly kind of free in the use of their revolvers.
You know, there's an old saying, you can always tell a Texan. But you can't tell them much.
That's right. So, you know, the original Texas cowboy was kind of a mix, actually, of what you just said, Spanish, Mexican, and American cultures.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a hodgepodge right there.
Yeah.
And if you go back, the conquistadors and early Spanish colonists introduced, you know, domestic cattle and horses into North America.
Yeah.
Okay, now this gave rise to the Mustang, which, of course, were horses that had escaped from the domesticated horses.
Weren't they originally, they swam to shore from the Spanish galleons that were off the coast, right?
Yeah, whatever they, you know, however they got here.
Yeah.
But anyway, these horses ran wild, they multiplied, and the Western Plains became kind of a natural horse and cattle country.
Yeah.
And they evolved into a pretty hardy, kind of an ill-formed breed of small horses that weren't really that big.
Yeah.
About 4 feet, 8 inches. And that's not a very big horse.
A lot of them never got above 900 pounds.
Yeah. So in a similar fashion, numbers of the Spanish cattle ran off into, or they were abandoned in the wild. They got together. They evolved into the Texas Longhorn, which is a tough, tough cow.
Oh, they had to be.
So I've never eaten Texas Longhorn cow, but
it's not so tough with the meat. It's that those son of a guns would kill you, walk over you, horn you, and everything else.
Yep. So of course, handling these cattle was the way of life for the Texas cowboy.
Yeah.
So they had to be tough. But by the 18th century, the aggressive and adventurous Spaniards, they were greedy for gold and territory, and they'd conquered the whole of Mexico, California, and Texas. And the Spanish settlers began cattle ranching there. Now, these ranches were run in the same free-range manner as those in Mexico. The cattle were allowed to wander far and wide over the unfenced open range to graze and to breed. And because cattle from different owners intermingled on the plains, a system of branding was introduced to identify the animals by the owner's individual mark.
Mm-hmm.
And with the grazing animals ranging over such a huge area, the horsemen had to be employed, of course, to round them up when it came time to round up the cows.
Yeah.
So over really probably hundreds of miles.
Oh, so easy, yeah, especially when you get down in that South Texas area by San Antone and Brownsville and all that area. Yeah.
So the Spanish ranchers recruited the cowboy and some Indians to look after the herds, and these were pretty tough cow herders, and they were called vaqueros.
Yep.
From the Spanish word for cow.
And then do you know what the derivative was for our word for that?
I think I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
So, but over the years, you know, they developed the traditional skills and the know-how in managing cattle from horseback. They roped the animals with their lariata, which, of course, is the lariat, which is a rawhide rope. They developed gear and equipment suitable to their particular occupation. And sometimes they were too poor to afford boots, and these early vaqueros strapped huge Spanish spurs to their bare or sandaled feet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, a lot of them were brought up in the saddle. They seldom walked if they could ride. They wore these wide-brimmed, huge hats that, I mean, they could almost cover the whole horse, you know.
Yeah.
They were big. And leather aprons or chaps to protect their legs from the chaparral, which is thorny. And, you know, I've heard stories of cowboys rushing in through that and just coming out in threads.
One quick story I heard one time, and I was reading a book about Texas cowboys and the Texas Longhorn. You'll appreciate this. They said, go ahead and rope one of those Texas Longhorns, tie him to a tree, and if he doesn't uproot the tree, come back in 6 months and he'll be gentled down.
And that's probably right. I mean, there's a lot of stories about the cattle drives, you know. But anyway, in 1803, you know, the United States purchased this great tract of land from France, and the size of the United States almost doubled by the middle of the century. Streams of wagon trains were rolling west from the Mississippi, carrying settlers to the far wilderness, and so the winning of the West had begun.
Yeah.
So now in 1820, there's a guy by the name of Moses Austin, and he was granted permission by the Spanish authorities to establish a colony of 300 Anglo-American families in the pretty much uninhabited land of Texas. There wasn't much there.
No, he was, oh boy, I better not jump ahead on you, but wasn't he the father of Stephen Austin?
Yes. Now, Moses Austin died, but before he could carry out his plans, and his son, Stephen, completed the task, settling the families on the rich farm and pasture land along the banks of the Colorado. When Mexico freed herself of the Spanish yoke in 1821, the Texas then came under Mexican rule.
Right.
And we're going to pursue that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in those early years, Stephen Austin was basically the undisputed leader of this growing colony, being a lawmaker, a chief judge, a military commander, and he dealt with the Indians. He encouraged industry and promoted commerce with the U.S. and stimulated a steady flow of Anglo-American immigrants into Texas.
Wasn't he kind of the main man that everybody had to see if they wanted to try to buy land and move in there?
He was kind of the head of a, so to speak, almost a country in a way. So, but the settlers were in constant conflict with the Indians, mainly the Kiowa and the Comanche, which the Comanche were especially the hardest to deal with. But Austin hired a band of horsemen to range over the country to scout the movements of the hostile Indians, and this duty gave rise to the Texas Rangers.
Ah, yes.
And we've done a story on them.
Yep.
But alarmed at the growing numbers of Anglos settling in Texas, the Mexican government tried to stop the tide in about 1830, and this action gave rise to the Texas War of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
And you know where we're headed with this.
Alamo.
Yeah, the new Texans brought with them the industry that characterized the frontier of American, of the Americans. But from the outset, the Texans assumed kind of a, and this is maybe not a good thing, but kind of a racial superiority over the Mexicans.
There was a hatred there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a hatred.
But in return, the Mexicans referred to the Anglos as gringos.
Yeah.
As kind of an uncomplimentary name derived from the Spanish word griego for Greek, meaning a foreigner who spoke Greek.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from. But anyway, this compelled the rebellious Texans to respect Mexican law and government. It was made extremely difficult because of the colony's isolation from the national capital of Mexico City.
But there was another problem, too, that a lot of the gringos that went into that country, they married into Mexican families, and so they had both sides of the fence right there. And this really created a lot of problems.
Exactly. Now, Stephen Austin actually was imprisoned by the Mexicans for a year and released in 1835. Now, later that year, the Texans rose in revolt, and Austin was called upon to command this small volunteer army, and he led a successful campaign against San Antonio.
Right.
But February 1836, the Mexican army, 5,000 strong, commanded by General Santa Anna.
Here we go.
President of Mexico entered San Antonio and, of course, laid siege to the fortified mission of the Alamo. And it was held by a garrison of some 180 men, which included, of course, James Boy, Davy Crockett. And, of course, these valiant defenders gave fierce resistance, and they managed to hold out for 13 days until they were crushed by the final assault at dawn on the 6th of March.
Right.
All the defenders fought to the death. The Mexicans, however, had won a victory, but they suffered 1,500 casualties.
Yeah, it was
1,500.
It was something. Yeah.
And it caused one of Santa Anna's generals to remark, another such victory, and we're ruined.
Yeah.
And to my listeners out there, our listeners, if you go back a few weeks, there's a story we told about the coward at the Alamo, kind of lets you know that there was one guy that did get away, sort of.
Yeah.
Anyway, now the Texan vengeance.
But you know who the real coward of the Alamo was?
Santa Anna himself.
Yeah.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah. Now, Texan vengeance came 46 days after the fall of the Alamo when General Sam Houston, with an army of less than 800 volunteers, defeated Santa Anna and his army of 1,300 at San Jacinto.
Yep.
And we did that story just a couple of weeks ago.
You did an excellent job.
Now, before joining the battle, Houston exhorted his men. He said, some of us may be killed, some must be killed. But soldiers, remember the Alamo, the Alamo, the Alamo. And the Texans fought with such ferocity that they completely routed the Mexicans in a matter of minutes.
Yep.
They killed 600 while losing only 8. Now, this stunning triumph freed Texas from Mexican rule, and a republic was declared in October 1836 with Sam Houston at its president. And the one thing we've talked about, Zeb, the Battle of San Jacinto gave us probably another third of the United States, clear up into Mexico, or Nevada, Arizona, Montana, Utah. So that was a huge thing for expansion.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because you are Dr. History, but I believe that led to the signing of the treaty called the Treaty of Hidalgo,
right.
I believe.
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And that's what gave us so much,
California's,
a very important battle.
Yeah.
Anyway, the early Anglo settlers in Texas were primarily farmers, and cattle ranching was at first not that important to them. But with the establishment of the Republic of Texas, the Mexican ranchers, kind of under harassment from the encroaching Texans, abandoned their ranches and many of their cattle and retired to the safety over the Rio Grande. So a lot of them just kind of left and went back into Mexico.
Yeah.
And kind of a sad thing in some ways.
You know, think of the movie Lonesome Dove.
Yeah.
Remember what part of the movie? Remember when they went across the border at night, Gus and Captain McRae, and stole all the Mexican horses? And then they were saying, well, we'll keep them for a couple of days, and then they'll probably come up and steal them from us. Remember
they
that?
They kept them.
Yeah.
Well, the Texans moved into the cattle country and took over the property and stock that Mexicans had left behind. And when the new republic declared all unbranded cattle public property, Texans, assisted by remaining vaqueros, began to round up the wild longhorns and brand them with their own marks. And these Anglo range riders adopted and adapted the methods and dress and equipment of the vaquero.
Right.
And in the following years, they developed the skills, the character, and the lifestyle that comprised the Texas cowboy. So again, this is the beginning. Now, you asked, why the name cowboy in particular? Why not cowman or cowherder or stock boy or cow driver?
Or today, cowperson.
Or trail rider. Well, indeed, they were called all these things in their time, but cowboy is the one that stuck and came into general use about a century ago. And it is an appropriate name because most cowboys were young.
Yep.
These were young guys.
Yep.
And so the term started to appear in magazines and newspaper articles, you know, cowboys, because a lot of them were, you know, even 14, 15, 16,
That's
17
right.
years old.
That's right.
So the cowboys of Texas are they're a kind of a peculiar breed.
We still are today, too.
You got to love them, you know. But, you know, early Texas usage of the name cowboy was also almost synonymous with bandit or robber. Some of them didn't have a very good reputation.
Yeah.
Because as those men drove in the cattle of the Mexican rancheros, sometimes they were plundering and murdering herdsmen, and they did some things that weren't quite right. But, you know, after the Civil War, cowboy came to signify anybody who tended cattle out west. But the name still retained a kind of a connotation of wildness. It was much, much later that cowboy spelled romantic adventure.
Some things never change.
That's right. But, you know, the popular term cowpuncher came into use in the mid-1880s. Now, I don't know if you know this, Zeb, but when cowboys employed what they called a prod pole,
yep,
to urge cattle through the chutes into railroad cars,
they were called cowpunchers.
They often had to punch those animals, yep, with their feet.
Yep.
That had got down in the crowded car, or cowpoke is another version of cowpuncher.
Yep.
A cowboy was called a buckaroo sometimes. I don't particularly care.
Do you know where that derivation came from?
Buckaroo?
Yeah.
Not
from
really.
The word vaquero.
Oh, okay.
The derivative of the Spanish word vaquero.
Okay.
Buckaroo, vaquero, that's where it came from.
Well, you know, the cattleman and the rancher, they were always used to donate an owner or raiser of cattle. And at the top of the league were the cattle kings or the barons. Huge, you know, was it the King Ranch down in Texas,
yeah.
One of the biggest.
Yeah.
But the original cowboy of this country was mainly a product of the Western, the Texas, you know, armed to the teeth, booted and spurred, long-haired, covered with a broad-brimmed sombrero, which was kind of his badge of his calling. His personal appearance proclaimed the sort of man he was. And the Texas cowboys were frontiersmen. They struggled. They had Indian battles. They fought bandits from Mexico. So they weren't just herding cows. But the peculiar characteristics of the Texas cowboys qualified them for an important public service. By virtue of their courage, their excellent horsemanship, their skill in the use of firearms, they'd been efficient in preventing Indian outbreaks and in protecting the frontier settlements. And as I mentioned earlier, the Texas Rangers are a part of that whole Texas cowboy story.
Can you name another group of people in the United States history that ever stood out en masse with the name cowboys? Everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, how could you not have a picture in your mind?
Yeah.
Anytime you hear the word cowboy, it's unique to the Western United
States. Absolutely.
And especially Texas.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the story of how the cowboys started out. And actually, if you go back a year or two ago, I did a story about the cowboys and on the ranches and stuff like that. So.
You did a story one time, I remember, about all the clothing and how it came into being, you know, with the chaps and the high-top boots and the low-slung heels and the, you know, the pointy-toed boots and everything. We did a whole thing on that. And, of course, the hats. But when you talk about, you say cowboy, and I'll tell you what, when I did the Olympics in 1996 in Atlanta, Georgia, I was absolutely amazed when I came down out of the announcer stand one day. There stood a Japanese family. And this little boy, about 5 or 6, he goes, "American cowboy!" And I signed my hat and gave it to him.
Is that right?
Yeah, and a very, very nice family.
You know, I was over in Park City a few years ago, and I happened to have on boots and a cowboy hat and jeans.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting outside a store waiting for my wife, and three ladies came up to me and asked if they could take my picture.
Really?
So I said, "Yeah, I'm a cowboy."
Well, what's your name? Well, my name is John Wayne, ma'am.
They call me Tex. I didn't have the heart to tell them.
There you go. Anyway. Why break the bubble?
I know. Yeah. They thought I was pretty amazing.
There you go.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.